And welcome to the Future of Business Energy podcast from Empower Business Solutions Energy HQ. In our first podcast of 2021, we'll be talking about the major government announcements at the end of 2020, specifically the 10-point plan for a green industrial revolution and the long-awaited energy white paper, as well as look forward to what businesses can expect in 2021 to help them with their own decarbonisation plans. So what do these announcements mean for business energy users? Alongside Paul French from Empower Business Solutions, we are delighted to welcome Adam Bell, Head of Energy Strategy at the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, and Robert Buckley, Head of Relationship Development at Cornwall Insight. So, welcome to everyone and thank you for joining us. Firstly, Adam, please can you tell us a little bit about your role at BEIS and your involvement in the Energy White Paper?
Certainly. Well, I'm the Head of Energy Strategy at BEIS. I've been working on the White Paper now for what feels like a very long time, but has been reality since it was announced at the end of 2018, when Greg Clark stood up and gave a speech which articulated his vision for energy policy. Of course, that was under the previous government, and quite a few things have changed over that period. And we've got an energy white paper now that is very, very comprehensive, very broad. It was the entirety of energy. Which is a first for about a couple of decades. I think the last one that covered absolutely everything was in 2008. Someone on Twitter dug that up and discovered that some of its predictions had come to fruit and some had not. So we're hoping to beat its record anyway.
So tell us about the Energy White Paper and specifically the key areas businesses should be aware of.
I think the first thing I'd want to look at is the scale of change. So as you point out in the White Paper, what we expect to happen as we get towards net zero is electricity demand to double. And it effectively take over from other vectors of the fuel types that are currently primary in the economy. We see fossil fuel use declining dramatically. Even fossil fuel use that uses carbon capture and storage is still going to be a much smaller proportion of our final energy demand than it is today. So that is going to be a dramatic change as well. All of your infrastructure that relies on fossil fuels right now, unless it's future-proof, is something that over the course of the next few decades is something that's going to shift, and there'll be opportunities along the way to help you to ensure that we can make this transition as simple and as smooth as possible, but that change is coming. It's also worth pointing out a couple of other particular policies that are particularly relevant to business energy users. So the UK ETS is the replacement for the ETS that was announced alongside the white paper. It's a relatively similar regime, so industrial energy users and anyone with a large energy demand should be relatively familiar with how it operates. It will be targeted at net zero, unlike the EU ETS. It will have something of a more aggressive curve as we get towards that target. But it does mean that there is an end in sight for carbon pricing within the UK. When we get to net zero, we'd expect emissions to be net zero. And it's something a business should be taking into account. As part of that, though, if you are a major energy user, especially if you're in industry, it's worth thinking, having a look at some of the policies there in the industrial chapter of the Energy White Paper, looking at things like capital grants to support fuel switching, support the deployment of carbon capture and storage. We've recently also published our consultation on business models for carbon capture and storage, which is the pipe industry as well. There's a lot in that section for businesses to get their teeth into. And the last point I'd really focus on here, which is quite a small one, but it's really important to SMEs. We were looking at how we could approach the regulation of third-party intermediaries.
And what can we expect over the coming year?
So there's an awful lot coming in over next year. So the white paper set out a broader framework for our strategy, the sorts of things that we expect to happen, this big push towards electrification. In order to deliver that, we're going to need more detail. So over the first half of next year and reaching a little bit past the summer, you'll see a tranche of new strategies coming out. So these will cover things like heat in buildings and the energy efficiency of buildings and a building strategy, which will give a unified view about how we're going to tackle the decarbonisation of buildings. We're going to have an industrial energy strategy as well as a hydrogen strategy. Hydrogen is a particularly important vector, putting in line with the Committee on Climate Change. And we want to talk about how we can drive forward a hydrogen economy on the back of the commitment to deliver 5 gigawatts of hydrogen production that the Prime Minister announced in his 10-point plan. We're also going to be consulting on a strategy and policy statement for Ofgem. So this is something that has been asked for by the sector for quite a while. We've had the power for quite a while. But for one reason or another, we haven't quite got around to publishing something that will set out the ask of stakeholders will be making the space for some time. So the idea here is that as we move towards net zero, the regulator needs to understand what the priorities of government are and the things it needs to focus on in the discharge of its mandates. The SPS will give it that sort of greater clarity about government's views on particular topics that are relevant to it, and should hopefully help it deliver its regulatory regime in a way which is appropriate to achieving net zero.
You mentioned there have been a lot of changes since the Energy White Paper was initially announced. So how do you keep it relevant when things can change so rapidly?
It's an excellent question. So I mean, over the course of the period of the White Paper, we have had a change of government, we've had a change of Prime Minister, we've had a number of changes of Secretary of State. Now, at the same time, the overall thrust, and this is cross-party, towards decarbonisation has not changed. We've always been working with the same objective. We've always been trying to deliver a set of policies, a strategy for the energy system that holds bills down, that delivers decarbonisation, and keeps the system secure. For us, the main thing that changes is the sorts of emphasis different ministers want to place in different sorts of things. I think the package that we have brought forward is an absolutely well-balanced one. It takes into account the needs of consumers to ensure that they aren't that they can energy remains affordable throughout this transition, and at the same time delivers a significant amount of investments in the system that's needed to get to net zero. I mean, the recent promotion of Kwasi Kwarteng, the Secretary of State, he was previously the Energy Minister. So for those of us in the energy side of the department, it's quite welcome. He already knows what he's talking about, and we don't have to rebrief him again, which is always a positive if you're a civil servant.
So, Robert, coming on to you, what are your thoughts then on the 10-point plan and the Energy White Paper?
Yeah, the Energy White Paper maps out the biggest change to the energy markets, arguably since the Electricity Act of 1989, and is probably even bigger than that, given the importance of the net zero targets. A lot of the headlines are focused on policy for investment, especially given the way that it followed on from the 10-point plan and the National Infrastructure Strategy. But there's a lot around market structure, a lot for consumers and businesses to take in and not be too distracted about decisions on large-scale generation investments. So for us, the White Paper signals a readiness to change the underlying architecture of the energy sector, which we haven't seen, as I said, since the 89 Act, and will have quite profound implications for the relationship between the producers in the broader sense in the sector and its customers. And that's what really distinguishes it from what's come before.
And Paul, what are your thoughts?
So we were really pleased to see both of these announcements and publications towards the end of last year. The 10-point plan showed a clearer direction of travel from government, but much of the detail is to follow. And what we're really expecting is a number of white papers to be published over the coming months and years. Most of the plan is actually residential focused, but it's important to highlight three points that are really key to businesses. So firstly, accelerating the shift to net zero emission vehicles. The target here is to end the sale of new petrol and diesel cars and vans by 2030 and hybrids by 2035. There's a delivery plan that we're expecting to be published later in the year, and this will detail further plans on how the government intends to roll out EV charging infrastructure right across the country. But the key message here really is definitely plan ahead and be aware of the shift in regulations and approach in central government. The second area for us is greener buildings. So there are plans for major investments in supporting energy efficiency upgrades in buildings. Whilst these are primarily focused on residential developments and public sector retrofit, there will be relevant points also for the private business sector. So again, that detail will follow later in the year with the heat and building strategy. And then the final area of real interest for us in the 10-point plan is the topic of green finance and innovation. In particular, the commitment to R&D funding of 2.4% of GDP by 2027 and the creation of a £1 billion net zero innovation portfolio to accelerate industry. So combined with the private sector capital that this will attract, this really does present a really exciting opportunity. So overall, as I said, whilst a lot of the detail now needs to follow, the Energy White Paper does give me reasons to be optimistic. Given how long we've waited for its publication, the Energy White Paper had to be ambitious and had some real meat on the bones of the 10-point plan. By and large, it delivers that. It's a vital piece of the net zero jigsaw to turn climate ambition into climate action. And for many businesses, the white paper should provide more confidence to invest and commit to their own plans for emission reductions and net zero. In our recent business blueprint survey on net zero that we published in 2020, business told us that they needed additional incentives and support from government to enable them to fully realize their low carbon ambitions. The white paper goes some way to addressing this, as well as outlining the support the government has provided to businesses so far. It also sets a target for all non-domestic rented buildings to be EPC Band B by 2030 and where that's cost effective for them to do so. Crucially, it recognizes that sourcing upfront investment for energy efficiency measures can be difficult, particularly for smaller businesses. So it's announced plans to consult on how the 2030 target can be implemented, as well as the introduction of a performance-based rating scheme for large commercial and industrial buildings and a strengthening of the energy savings opportunity scheme. So all in all, there's a lot to welcome, but more still to be done. And we really look forward to taking part in further consultations this year to support business energy users.
Robert, the Energy White Paper was highly anticipated ahead of its publication. So was it worth the wait?
I think what we saw, if you look back from when we were first expecting a white paper, shortly after net zero was confirmed as a policy objective in the summer of the year before last, we were expecting a white paper. Then we had a change of prime minister and a change of senior ministers within BEIS, and we saw. What turned out to be a very important consultation in the current context about the future of energy retail markets. A lot of the issues that were raised in that consultation in the summer of 2019 have come forward in this white paper and have really been quite a long way below the radar in a lot of the coverage. That aside, we then saw a process of, or what looks in hindsight like a process of, the UK taking the joint presidency of the COP26 summit in Glasgow. Remember, that should have been held a couple of months ago rather than the coming November due to COVID. We saw the COVID recovery plan, which has some quite strong emphasis on domestic energy efficiency and really recognising decarbonisation of the heat system as a source of economic growth and recovery from COVID. You begin to see that come through in the 10-point plan as well, with the upping of some of the objectives, say, around offshore wind. And that comes through into the infrastructure strategy and into the white paper, with its emphasis on things like local content in the big project development plans that are going to be taken forward. So there's an awful lot that if you look back now, you can see a sequence that's led to its development, even if at the time we perhaps couldn't quite see it.
So we've looked at the recent announcements, but what are the top things that need to happen in 2021 to keep momentum going? So, Paul, if I could come to you first with this one.
So from a business perspective, the key is to not lose sight of the net zero goal. Last year, to mark New York Climate Week, a report from EnviroLab and the New Climate Institute showed there's been a threefold increase in the number of businesses that have set net zero goals. The businesses included represent a combined revenue of more than $11 trillion. And whilst the numbers reported don't cover the vast amount of local level initiatives, it gives a real sense of the upwards path towards net zero. And that's despite the huge impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Businesses recognize the contribution they can make to helping the UK reach its net zero goal. And we're working with them to help them turn sustainable ambition into reality. Following the numerous announcements at the end of 2020, it's important that the current situation does not derail progress. In particular, in the run-up to COP26, it's key there's no delay in the publication of several really important pieces of policy for business. And they include the industrial decarbonisation strategy, the transport decarbonisation plan, and the Treasury's net zero review. In November 2020, the government also announced the appointment of Andrew Griffith as the UK's net zero business champion. His role is to support businesses to make credible plans to achieve net zero by 2050. So this is an area where more government guidance is absolutely required, especially in the decarbonisation of heat and the key steps that industry can take towards the transition.
And Robert?
Yeah, the government has certainly gone for recognizing that, you know, net zero means more than just skin deep reforms, which we could argue that electricity market reform is, for example. No doubt we'll talk a little bit later about some of the big initiatives that are expected this year. But if it all comes to pass, we will see a range of new proposals that will shake up the traditional structures of not just the electricity and the gas markets as we know it, but will begin to make us think about the purpose that we're using our energy for, whether it's heat, light, power or transport. Well, the white paper sets out, to be fair, the white paper, the infrastructure strategy before it, and the 10-point plan all set out things that need to be done. I'm just going to pick out a few. Remember, we've also got a Treasury review of the costs of funding net zero in early 2021, something which will be very close to the hearts of a number of listeners here. I'm sure that a consultation or initiative on setting more transparent and accurate information on carbon content for consumers about when they're choosing their energy services and products. And it's a very fast moving area in the business market at the moment, and in the domestic market. You know, we've had various goes over the years of trying to define what a green tariff is. So I think if we're thinking about changing consumer behavior and recognizing that there is a value in green, we need to understand what green is and define it properly so customers of all types can understand what they're getting for their money. We're also talking about whether there should be, you know, what kind of regulatory framework we need for third-party brokers and price comparison websites. Question whether that in the end will extend into the larger business market. We're also talking about a strategy and policy statement for the regulator. We're talking about ensuring, having a look at whether the governance and institutional arrangements are fit for purpose. All these are all promised for this year. So that's an awful lot for any government and anybody responding to it to have the bandwidth to take in. And I could add several more. Particularly as we go through into 2022.
Nadim, what are the key things from your perspective?
Well, the big thing, climate terms this year, is of course going to be the Conference of the Parties in November in Glasgow, which the UK is hosting. It's a year in which the UK can demonstrate its global leadership. The Energy White Paper has been very helpful in the space, setting up the scope of our ambition in energy. But what we want to do in advance of COP is set out our ambition across the entire economy via a net zero strategy that will be published in advance. So this will go beyond even the very ambitious measures in the white paper, and we'll set out how we're going to tackle some of those really, really difficult decarbonized sectors like heat, like transport, and go beyond where we are now. The Prime Minister's already committed to a much more ambitious decarbonization commitment by 2030, the so-called National Determined Contribution. And our strategy will set out in part how we'll achieve that too. So yet another very exciting year for those of us who are decarbonisation geeks.
Yep, I think we can all agree on that one, Adam. So moving on to the current situation and the impact on business, once again, we find ourselves in lockdown. Based on what happened during the 2020 lockdown, how do you anticipate this hitting demand? Robert, if I could come to you first.
Well, I think businesses are, first of all, in the what can they do, given the current lockdown rules. I think there are some important differences this time with last time. You know, construction and manufacturing at the moment are able to continue. The recommendation is for, you know, if you can do your work at home, then you should. So there'll be some change of consumption between domestic and business. I think the other thing at the back of all of this is that in the first lockdown, we were coming into spring and demand was naturally falling away and prices fell away. The time that we're speaking, our wholesale prices have been on a very strong rising trajectory for a number of weeks due to factors that are, you know, not internal to GB. So there you know, there will be profound effects for those businesses that can't open. But for those businesses that are open, there's a lot more going on in terms of what's influencing the market around them than just the lockdown that we as we experienced in the in the spring of last year.
And Adam?
It's quite a different context. The first lockdown was, of course, going from spring into the early summer. So demand is always low in the summer anyway. But this last summer, it was particularly acute. I think demand got down between 13 to 15 gigawatts at one stage. And that had a dramatic impact in the way in which you operate the system, of course. It meant that National Grid had looked at things like taking options on scaling back power output from nuclear power stations in a way which they haven't necessarily had to before. So it was a significant change. In many ways, it was a preview of the renewables heavy system that we expect to have in the future and the lessons that we're going to learn for future system operation. This time around, it's been quite a cold winter. And so demand has not gone down by anywhere near as much. And so the system operation challenges faced by grid have thankfully been a lot less severe. That's not to say that we can never be complacent. Grid have issued a few notices to generators that to increase their output. I think we'll continue to think about everything that we need to do to ensure the system is secure over the coming year.
Paul, how are you supporting customers?
So during the first lockdown, we worked really closely with our energy management customers to ensure they cut back on unnecessary costs due to the shutdown or temporary closure of plant and property. So that really helped our retail customers offset some of the reduction in their sales. As Robert and Adam have already covered, this lockdown is different than we are in winter and many industries are still running. It's our job now to look at how this fluctuating demand impacts our customers. For example, a lot of other sectors, including so-called non-essential retail, hospitality and leisure, they're closed again. So we're working closely with these customers to ensure their energy consumption is kept to a minimum. During the first lockdown, we worked with one customer across its entire European estate to reduce its electricity consumption via a remote energy management center. Having that level of remote management in place means we're able to act quickly. So we can alter controls in different regions so customers can see immediate benefit. So for example, with this particular retailer, they saw an 80% reduction in electricity consumption during the time its stores were closed from March to June last year, which obviously has a huge impact in terms of their ability to recover their costs. As we experience another period of disruption, it's important that businesses have a robust energy management plan in place and work with an expert partner who can deploy agile tools to help them effectively manage demand or lack of it during times of business inactivity.
So based on these learnings, what can businesses be doing to plan ahead during these uncertain times and ensure that the focus on net zero isn't lost? Adam, any advice from your point of view?
I think the best thing to do, and I don't mean to tell businesses how they should invest, that's their capital they're putting at risk. But if it were me, I would focus on the certainties that you do have. So you know that the government's committed to achieving net zero. You know this is going to have a number of implications for your business and across the entire economy. So in that context, it's worth thinking about how you can take advantage of the opportunities that this will offer over the next decade. So to give a couple of examples, if there's going to be an awful lot more electricity demand in the system and if an awful lot more of that's coming from renewables, you're going to need more flexible generation, flexible assets. This doesn't need to be just plant that produces electricity. This can be businesses that receive recompense for turning down their demand. There's a number of companies that have done this already. Especially anyone who's got large refrigeration units, there are ways of modulating power consumption of those in line with market conditions to receive revenue. Number of companies that facilitate that too. So if you're a company with high energy demand, it's worth looking into those sorts of opportunities because we know we're going to need more in the future. And we know that prices and price signals associated with those are only likely to increase. At the same time, as I mentioned before, it's worth thinking about how the other kind of suite of policies government is being in place to support transition to net zero or something that could advantage your business. So this is things like, as I said before, the deployment of CCUS, but it's also as we roll out 600,000 heat pumps over the next decade, what does that mean for you if you're involved in, say, the boiler supply chain or the installation or any form of works in home or in offices? What does that mean for the sort of expertise that your staff are going to require? What does it mean for the fabric of any buildings in which you operate? You know that some things are going to change. How can you get ahead of the curve? How can you ensure that you are being robust to a range of different outcomes as a consequence of this? I mean, it's worth bearing in mind, of course, when it comes to things like energy efficiency, this is normally something that you should be doing anyway. We know from an awful lot of the work that we've done in industry and in non-domestic properties, there are an awful lot of value being left on the shelf, primarily because businesses don't have the capacity to focus on it. They've got the core business to deliver, and energy efficiency, especially for smaller to medium enterprises, isn't necessarily something they focus on. But there is money to be made and advantage to be gained as a consequence of focusing on those things.
And Paul, what are you advising businesses to do?
So this year, net zero will become an even more pressing political and business issue. But there are several steps businesses can take to make sure their plans progress, even during these uncertain times. Firstly, it's about being realistic. Put the credibility behind sustainability. Greenwashing has become a common term, with consumers as well as environmental and energy experts willing to call out bad corporate behavior and disingenuous promises when it comes to net zero pledges. Businesses now really need to ensure they have credible evidence behind their plans if they're going to survive under the spotlight. This growing need for evidencing sustainability can place additional pressures on already busy organizations. So working with an energy partner like Empower to help plan ambitious yet realistic goals is a great way to really get ahead of the competition. Second, smart data means smart strategies. So using data to develop and underpin a net zero delivery roadmap and strategy is critical. Third, invest in energy efficiency. So energy efficiency is effectively a no-regrets action, particularly if you have a plant, office, or on-site premises that could benefit from relatively quick wins, such as switching to more efficient lighting, such as LED. This can then lead to bigger investments into effective motor management and low-carbon heating and cooling solutions. Many organizations are leaping straight to renewable technology solutions without really optimizing existing plant and services. But using smart data collection analysis can enable your business to spot and correct areas of waste or to assess the effectiveness of each new energy efficiency measure and then implement it at a very low cost. Fourth, given these uncertain times, is continue to plan for disruption. While we hope for a more settled 2021, the first quarter at least will continue to bring that disruption. 2020 has shown that businesses can be agile. So the key is to continue to find new ways of adapting, surviving, and then looking ahead to the future. Over the next 6 months, it's important to work with your energy partner to look at the longer term implications of fluctuating energy consumption and prices and how best to mitigate any risk, and then also to assess opportunities. And then finally, fifth, sustainable procurement and self-sufficiency will grow in importance. Buying and using renewable power is a key way to offset carbon emissions and will feature in many organizations' net zero plans. You can also explore on-site generation, which, as well as reducing emissions, makes businesses less reliant on the grid, enabling greater control over your energy consumption, and can provide future revenue opportunities.
Finally, Robert, any thoughts?
I think there's a really trite point, but it's worth making all the same. The decarbonisation that we've done so far has primarily been through electricity, and that has had an effect on the price that the consumer has been paying, but it's not really had an effect on, providing they can afford their bills, of course, how they use their power. If we start to talk about decarbonizing transport, and particularly if we start to talk about decarbonizing heat, you're going to look at much more sustained interventions into the how the energy is used, as well as the how the energy is created. So for people who are thinking ahead on this one, there's a lot of many businesses have done a lot of work in this area because they have their own net zero commitments. So they're seeking to understand the impact that they're having at the moment on the current baseline and how that might change and what the changes are that they may need to effect. I think for those that are less sure or less confident, I think having a view of the kind of things that you might need to look at in a 5 to 10 year timeline is a very useful thing to do, because otherwise you'll find that the policy framework evolves and these things will be done to you rather than you having the opportunity to either shape them or use them as opportunities. Because if we do follow through with anything like the scale of the ambition that's set out to in this set of policy documents, there's going to be some really big changes in the way that we're using our energy in the wider sense by the time we get to 2030.
So even though we are experiencing uncertain times, are you all optimistic for 2021 in terms of the progress towards net zero? Adam?
I am. First of all, you'd expect me to say that, but at the same time, I've been in energy for over a decade, and there have been periods where there have been more decisions made and fewer decisions made. After the white paper, there's a lot of strategies coming this year, and a serious strategy is coming too. This is going to be a year of making some of the harder choices that we need to make to get to net zero. Once we've done that, we'll be in a really good position to continue the delivery that we're doing and increase our ambition even more. So I am optimistic. This will be a year in which an awful lot of things, an awful lot of snowballs begin to accumulate on the edge of a cliff and become an avalanche.
I think I am optimistic. I think you can look back through the last 18 months and see that what we've seen is a recognition of the very substantial changes that will need to be instituted if we're going to get anywhere near a net zero by 2050 target. The roadmap is set out. There's a bunch of people who believe that it's deliverable, and so we would be amongst that and see genuine commercial opportunity. I think it's very, very important that the consumer side of the market is engaged as a properly active participant within it and not just done to. I think if you don't have the consumer confidence, whether it's households or business, then this agenda will become very, very difficult to deliver.
Finally, Paul, are you optimistic about 2021?
I absolutely am. The UK hosting COP26 in November this year provides a real deadline to ensure the policies promised at the end of the year are really actioned. Whilst the plans published to date are definitely major steps in the right direction, there's a heavy focus on supporting and funding public sector ambitions and less on private sector. The 10-point plan clearly illustrated the direction of travel the government intends for the public sector, but the role of private sector businesses in reaching our net zero goal will also be vital. Further clarity from government as regards how they intend to support businesses and the funding that will be made available, particularly in relation to heat decarbonisation and how they plan to support the manufacturing and industrial segments, will be extremely important. So whilst it's clear more still needs to be done to support businesses, there's now a noticeable momentum that we can't afford to lose if we are to meet climate targets.
Well, I think that's a great point to wrap up on. Thank you to all of you for taking the time to talk to us. And it seems that the overwhelming message is that announcements at the end of 2020 need to kick off a year of net zero momentum in 2021, particularly as we head towards COP26 in November, and that the role of business in any net zero strategy is vital. Similarly, we should not let uncertain times hamper progress, and there are some key steps businesses can be taking now to turn their sustainability ambitions into action. So for more advice and information on how Empower Business Solutions can help your business on its road to net zero, please visit www.energy-hq.co.uk or join the conversation using the hashtag #RoadToNetZero.